Okay, we're going to begin at this time. I'd like to call to order the June 17th, 2021 governing board, TPA governing board meeting. At this time, can everyone stand and join us in the invocation presented by Mayor Wilson?
Let us pray. Oh, Heavenly Father, we are here once again with bowed heads and humble hearts, thanking you for your grace and your mercy. Realizing, Father, over and over again, that through your grace and your mercy, you've been better to us than we've been to ourselves. And with that, we say thank you. Thank you, Father, for being that beacon of light when it seems so dark at times. Thank you for being that doctor in our sick room, that bridge over our troubled waters, that lily in the valley. Father, we know without a doubt, you are a bright and morning star. You're the creator of all things. Help us to reveal your love and presence to all people. And finally, Father, we ask a special prayer for our chairperson and all of us whom you have allowed to be assembled here today, realizing that we're no strangers to each other, just perhaps friends who have not yet met. We give you all the praises and the glory. Amen.
One nation, under indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, as we have been for a while now, the Palm Beach TPA is conducting this meeting both in person and virtually using, is that better? Can you hear me now? And virtually using the Zoom webinar platform. Instructions to join a virtual meeting, as well as contact information to assist, are provided on the published meeting agenda at our website. Following that, I will ask the staff to do a roll call.
At this time, I am only asking those board members attending in person to respond by saying "here" when I call your name. And then I want to remind everybody that the microphone is on when you hit the base and the top is red. And then alternates, please state your name if you are attending on behalf of a TPA board representative. Steve Wilson.
Here.
Yvette Drucker. Andy Thompson.
Thankful to be here.
Stephen Grant.
Present.
Shelley Petrolia. Joel Flores.
Present.
Jim Koretsky.
Here.
Christopher McVoy. Joni Brinkman. Catherine Waldron.
Here.
Chelsea Reed.
Marcy Tinsley here on behalf of Chelsea Reed.
Melissa McKinley.
Here.
Maria Marino.
Here.
Maria Sachs. Greg Weiss.
Here.
Douglas Lawson is excused. Michael Napoleon.
Here.
Christina Lambert.
Kelly Shove, alternate for Christina Lambert.
Joseph Paduzzi. Robert Weinroth.
Here.
Fred Pinto.
Here.
We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Marjorie, are there any modifications to the agenda?
Yes, Mr. Chair. A few members of the TPA board have requested permission to participate remotely. I will read the list of members along with a brief explanation of the significant circumstance preventing their in-person attendance so that the board may determine if these members will be permitted into the meeting as virtual participants. Before I do that, Mr. Chair, I do want to note for the record that Mayor Scott Singer has joined us on behalf of Yvette Drucker and Commissioner Christopher McVoy is also present. So I have Julie Casale from the city of Delray Beach is requesting to participate remotely as she has personal matters to attend to out of town. And I also have Commissioner Maria Sachs that has pressing matters related to COVID and is unable to attend in person.
Okay, any members of the board who object to allowing these members to participate remotely? Seeing none. Okay, so we're now they are admitted to the meeting and we'll be able to participate freely. All right, going for general public comments from members of the board. Before I get to that, general public comment from the public. As a reminder, there are three ways to provide public comment for this meeting. Written comments may be submitted online by the website provided in the agenda. Verbal comments may be made by a virtual attendee using the raised hand feature in the Zoom platform. And verbal and written comments may be provided by in person by anyone attending, submitting a comment card available to you at the welcome table. Staff, do we have any public comments submitted prior to the meeting?
No, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, if we could reflect for the record that Commissioner McVoy has joined us.
I stated that earlier, Paul. I'm sorry. I said McVoy as well. My apologies.
So I think we're covered.
Yes.
We're good? Okay. We're good.
And then no general public comments at this time.
Okay. All right. At this time, I want to invite board members to make comments. Before that, I'd just like to share a brief update that myself and Nick, our executive director, did meet last week with the county administrator and members of her staff to have a further discussion on the possible proposal of the transportation fee 1 cent tax. Once again, that meeting went very well. We are progressing down a path where we're really identifying the action items and tasks that must be accomplished and what order they must be accomplished in. I think we'll be providing an update later on in this meeting on our mobility plan. We shared with them at this meeting the framework of what we call the mobility plan that basically is the foundational model for, you know, why we need to move forward with this funding mechanism and what that looks like in the long term. So with that, if anyone here from the board would like to make comments? So recognized. Mayor Grant, I think you were first. Yeah.
Thank you. So I want to say that I did have a conversation with FDOT regarding the tip pulled item for the interchange of I-95 and Boynton Beach Boulevard. It was, I think, a very productive conversation. So that we can get the costs associated with moving from a 7-foot buffered bike lane and a 6-foot sidewalk to more of a shared use path, or maybe a wide sidewalk and a bike lane. And so I'm very excited to hear back from FDOT. I did learn that they are doing a shared use path over an interchange on Southwest 10th Street over in Deerfield Beach. And I feel that, you know, when you have bicyclists going up a hill and down a hill, it's best that they are protected more than just 2 feet of lines. And that is it for me.
Okay, from a procedural standpoint, all right, he's had those conversations. How does this play out?
Mr. Chair, last month at the TPA board meeting, the board passed a motion to remove the I-95 Boynton right. Beach interchange from the tip so that these conversations could occur.
Okay.
The conversations are now occurring, and that once those conversations have come to a resolution, that project will be presented as an amendment to bring the funding back into the tip.
So FDOT will bring that back to the board.
Sure, at a future TPA board meeting. And candidly, right now we're probably targeting September as the date at which that project would be reintroduced.
That work for you?
Okay.
Right. Jim?
I just wanted to provide some follow-up on an item that we became aware of last meeting and discussed, and I want to recognize the good work by a number of people making something happen. First, TPA staff, you know, they brought before us this new process where they were going to share, you know, a cursory review of fatal pedestrian bicycle crash. First example was one that happened in town of Jupiter on Indian Town Road. And in the staff recommendation, they said potential actions is TPA or FDOT could fund, furnish, and install costs for high contrast yellow backplates on east-west signal heads to improve visibility at sunrise, sunset. So both our staff who heard about this in the technical committee for the TPA and I jumped on this. And so FDOT had a policy last year that they changed that eliminated the requirement to have to do a structural analysis of the post signal, you know, structure, and it's now approved for a certain type of backplate. So FDOT staff already began whatever engineering is needed to put a package out for the lights on Indian Town Road that we have pedestrian crossings to get these done. And it's my understanding it'll be it'll go out and be constructed at, by the end of the year. Huge success. I just really wanted to kind of share that. And, you know, clearly I recognize, okay, so TPA staff brought this up. Our town engineer followed up. And FDOT jumped on it, right? So really a great example of, you know, alignment toward Vision Zero. And I want to just, I couldn't go be remiss just without emphasizing that. But then if I, so as a elected official for the town of Jupiter, gee, I feel good. I took care of the town. But the one thing, and I've said this in the past before, the one thing I do think lacks is a program. Now a program may happen, but I know that we affect funding. There's absolutely no way, there's no way that it, this, what I'm about to say couldn't happen. If this is a safety priority for Vision Zero, we could, in my mind, by the end of the year, if it was so willed and funded, we could take every four or six lane roadway in the county, east-west oriented, that's subject to the same thing, and make it happen. But we've never done as a TPA in all the years I've been here, we do road by road, right? Mm. And I'm not saying we may not give the guidance that when you get around to this road, make it happen. But I just wanted to share, you know, I've achieved the success in the town and I'm thrilled with that, but I'm not happy as a council, as a TPA member, if we don't really change, because the only way we're going to really accomplish Vision Zero is to truly jump on program stuff. It could be done. It's not impossible. It may be a funding limitation, in which case we can do that. You know, package could go out, and I'd be remiss if I didn't just kind of advocate that for you know, other municipalities that, you know, may not have engineers to follow up on this kind of stuff, right? But I just, anyway, I just wanted to make that suggestion.
You want to comment on that, Nick?
Suggestion, right?
Yeah.
I'd be happy to investigate that further with the DOT and with the County Traffic Division and with the City of Boca Raton. I think those are the three main entities involved in most of the maintenance of most of our signalized intersections, and see if we can't identify what the total cost of implementation of something like that would be, and then seek out a funding source to make it happen.
Okay. Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to lend support. I appreciate that from the town of Jupiter, as we have similar concerns along the Broadway corridor. So same exact issue where we have a lot of pedestrians, a lot of bicycle traffic, mainly for folks who are commuting to jobs. So it's extremely important that we continue to focus. And I know this board, as well as FDOT, continues to support looking at plans for that Broadway corridor, but certainly happy to work together with this board, the City of West Palm Beach, and FDOT to achieve that vision as well. Thank you.
I don't know if you or Bill. I don't know who was right. Go
ahead. And I too, we have a lot of pedestrian bicycle traffic.
Yeah. Chris McVoy, Lake Worth Beach. We too would support the effort that Jim mentioned and Kelly from West Palm Beach, that we have a lot of bicycle and pedestrian traffic as well. That's an issue. Two other short things. One is we had a presentation from Dan Burden on mini roundabouts, which we've talked about here before as a possibility for Federal Highway in Lake Worth. And I had been initially a little bit skeptical of them. I'm still not sure that they can fit in the area, but overall the concept and seeing it used all across the country, various places, and the improvements in safety, I was very impressed with that. The other one is a technicality, but important to one of our neighborhoods. There's a section of the wall along 95 in the north part of Lake Worth that for some reason was not completed. And there's definitely interest in that. And I'll get with Neil to communicate that. Thank you.
Commissioner Weiss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last month, I brought up an issue regarding a safety issue at an intersection of Green Street and Military Trail in adjacent to the airport. And I want to thank your staff at TPA for getting involved in that. And there is going to, they're re-engineering where the some of the poles are that block the sight lines. And so they're working on that. They've cleared out some of the vegetation that was also hindering the ability to see what was happening up the road. So that's a positive thing. Also, I was sort of surprised the quiet zones were no longer quiet in West Palm Beach this week. And I didn't receive any information on that. I don't know if the city of West Palm Beach received any information directly on it, but it'll be going on the rest of the county, I'm assuming, as they install their positive train control system. So maybe if there's a way to reach out to, I don't know whether it's Brightline or if it's the FEC or who's got the schedule to make sure that all the other municipalities along the line are alerted so that they can alert their residents. So they're aware of what's going to be happening. Because it did cause some folks to wonder what had happened and when's it going to end and or is it ending? And able to find the information.
Doing testing?
What's that?
They're doing testing of some kind?
Yeah, they're not testing. They are, when they do any kind of construction, if they have construction workers around, then they must blow their horns.
Got it.
And this has been going on 24/7. Well, not 24/7. It's going 24 hours a day now. I think it started on Sunday or Monday.
Wow.
And so anytime a train comes by, whether it's Brightline, freight or whatever, they're blowing their horns. And through our section of town, the streets are very close together. So it's kind of like a constant laying on the horns there. And then also just to add on, I saw an email from Commissioner Shove regarding what's happening north of the city or the north end of the city and how important it is to make sure that you continue to support the quiet zones going north of 15th Street all the way up through the county. And my understanding is Brightline, that's the plan. When they go into the second phase, they will be installing the safety procedures, working with TPA so that they can have quiet zones north on the north end of the county as well.
Thank you. Can I add anything to that?
I think Commissioner Weiss covered it fairly well. Happy to share the information. I had reached out to Brightline myself in regard to both the quiet zones in the south end not being so quiet as of lately, as well as a continued ask from the north end to install the quiet zone safety mechanism so that we can continue. It's also very close residentially to the railroad tracks in the north end, and we're very much looking forward to that. So I'm certainly supportive, happy to share that information with you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Executive Director, and Commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? I don't see any other cards up. So with that, then we'll move forward. No hands are raised?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, just checking. All right, we're going to get an update then from the Executive Director's report.
Well, good morning, everyone. And I think for the sake of continuity, I'm going to do this from the bottom to the top, because one of the items on my report was an update on the Brightline signal testing and why the horns are blowing. So I think Commissioner Weiss led into it very well. Exactly what Commissioner Weiss said, that during construction activity, Brightline trains and FEC freight trains are obligated to blow their horns while construction zones are present. One of the things that I can do and will be happy to take as an action item is to ensure that all of the elected officials along the corridors, the corridor of the FEC railway, are in are subscribed to Brightline's construction notices, which are put out weekly and identify exactly which crossings along the FEC are going to be part of a construction zone and for which days, so that you have a better idea of where the trains are going to be obligated to blow their horns when you're approached by constituents saying, "What the heck's going on? What happened to my quiet zone?" You'll at least be able to say it's temporary and will be resumed shortly. And then for the folks on the north end, the other item I'm trying to highlight in this report is we are working with Brightline. We've already identified the additional step, or what we call supplemental safety measures, necessary to be installed in each of the crossings north of 15th Street in West Palm Beach. We have executed an agreement with Brightline to provide the funding necessary to construct those supplemental safety measures. And while they are double tracking the corridor and they're installing the additional work, the equipment at the crossings, they're installing the TPA's funded supplemental safety measures, when that northern portion of the corridor is complete and all of the electronic systems have been tested and confirmed to be operational, which might be a significant amount of time after you stop seeing trucks at the crossings. So I want to make sure you understand that point. You might think everything's done. They're not out there anymore. Why aren't the quiet zones able to be designated? It's because there's electronic systems that also have to be installed, tested, and fully operational before we can go through the process of designating the quiet zones. But we are setting up all of our northern municipalities to be eligible for quiet zone designation, and we are going to work with them to establish those quiet zones at around the time that Brightline commences what they're calling phase two service from West Palm Beach north to Orlando. So that relief is coming, but it's not coming as quickly as we would probably all have hoped. And right now, I think Brightline, let me say this, we're going to have Brightline come and do an update to the TPA board at one of our upcoming meetings, maybe September or October, prior to recommencing service to the south, to also give us an update on their phase two progress and schedule. And so rather than me give you a speculative answer as to timing, I'm going to give them an opportunity to commit to a more specific time frame for completion. So jumping back to the top, I wanted to recognize Cassie Sparks is our new PR specialist. We've added her to the TPA staff, and we're excited to have her as part of the team. She's here today with us this morning. And then also, we have done a great deal of work in the Lake Worth Road resurfacing project. We have really expanded the scope of work that's going to be done through the Village of Palm Springs and portions of unincorporated Palm Beach County as a resurfacing job to incorporate not only a maintenance work that's needed for that corridor, but also introduction of separated bicycle facilities. And by separated, I mean there will be a raised concrete median between the vehicle lane and the bicycle facility on the road, and wider sidewalks to promote better pedestrian activity and space for people who are uncomfortable riding in the road, even with that concrete separator. And then also a new pedestrian crossing, a signalized mid-block pedestrian crossing that will be incorporated. And this is the portion of Lake Worth Road from west of Military Trail to east of Congress Avenue. And mention that this is a TPA priority project. It's really, again, as Council Member Koretsky noted, it's a partnership between the DOT, the TPA, the local government to identify what the desired outcomes are, and then to identify and find the funding needed to make those outcomes occur. There's a public meeting. I've put the information there as well as an opportunity to join that virtually if anyone's interested. And then the TPA has also created a very attractive video to demonstrate what that corridor is going to look like. And that'll be available at the public meeting. We can send out a link maybe as a follow-up. I won't take time in the meeting this morning, but if you want to get a better sense of what we're hoping to accomplish with that project, I think you'll really like what you see. Mr. Chair, that's it. I have a relatively brief report this morning.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone have questions for Nick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to thank Nick. I reached out to him probably more on your behalf than on mine, but same district. Being slightly frustrated that your La Mancha Road project was vetoed again this year in the state budget, and had asked Nick to look at it, and I understand that you two have had a good conversation. It's definitely worth noting as I'm reviewing Nick's correspondence with my office earlier this week. We had Secretary Thibault came and spoke to the Association of Counties at our conference in Tallahassee in March and sort of implored on the membership what can happen if there is a separate appropriation made for road projects that should be considered and go through the TPA process. And I'm just going to read real quick from Nick's notes. It says, last, it's worth noting that if the village were to receive a non-veto legislative appropriation that did not explicitly designate the project for state funding, FDOT may attempt to use TPA federal funds to honor that decision. That would require all of the steps noted above and would negatively impact existing TPA priorities in our district. That would be Okeechobee Pathway, roundabouts at Folsom and Loxahatchee Groves, State Road 80 street lighting in Western Palm Beach County, et cetera, et cetera. So I would love if we could go through this process of trying to get this. Nick said that though a waiver might be able to be issued with some of the hiccups that we have on that proposed project. See if there's TPA funding to do the remaining portions of this project that wouldn't require a waiver, rather than put some of our other projects in our district, Mr. Mayor, at risk. But definitely want to work with you and with Nick to make sure we can do something, because I think what you're proposing is a good idea.
Okay, thank you. You want to comment?
It's an interesting conversation. For those of you unfamiliar with the project, it's an extension of an existing roadway for maybe 1,000 feet, a quarter mile, 1,300 feet or so. It's not a huge distance, but from a federal perspective, when you add money to build a road, it counts as a new road, even if it's clear that the public right-of-way is here, this endpoint and that endpoint are very close to one another, and there's only one way to do it. And so we're going to either have to go through all the hoops necessary as if you're building a brand new road anywhere, or we're going to try to seek a waiver because this is a smaller project, a categorical exemption from the federal NEPA requirements, and see if we can't help the village with some funding to construct this infrastructure project. The other thing is, just to mention, when you're building new roads like that, and they do get complicated, and I think the county's extension of Flavor Picked Road over the turnpike, Hagen Ranch to Lyons, was actually one of the projects identified by Lois Frankel's office for a potential member designated project funding. And that may, when Congress gets involved, it's all federal money. And that might also trigger some of those same criteria where the county has diligently protected a corridor and said, we know exactly where we intend to build this road. And then the federal government gets involved and says, you better evaluate 7 different alternatives before we agree to put federal money on a project. We need to recognize that there are certain things that we can do with federal money that are easy. There are some things that we can do that are more cumbersome. And to that extent, we're going to engage our lobbyists to see if we can't eliminate some of the bureaucratic red tape for obvious answers and get projects built. And then also encourage all of our members to remember that our local initiatives program, our transportation alternatives program, are federally funded programs where if you're constructing or rebuilding roads within existing rights of way, or if you're constructing non-motorized facilities in unimproved rights of way, those are things that we can automatically declare to be exempt from the environmental review process on the federal level, and we can build them rather quickly. And that's why we've created those programs to allow for that kind of project to get built.
Well, Nick, I think you bring up a good point that at some point on our calendar, we're all guilty of it. I've done it too, where we put into our legislative priorities and we stick our lobbyists on trying to get an appropriation for a road project, that maybe we should have those requests processed through the TPA to make sure we're not going to cause a conflict with the existing plan we have here locally. And I think that's what I heard the secretary asking us to do. And that was something maybe your staff could take a look at doing. Our timeline is a bit of a crunch with session and committee meeting starting in September, but take a look at those appropriation requests that each of our jurisdictions are submitting to our legislative delegation and make sure they're not in conflict with our existing TPA plans.
Okay, excellent. Any other questions for Nick? No? Yes. That's okay.
Good morning. Can you hear me? So I was looking at your high visibility enforcement funding here. And is there a way that we could pursue grants for a large project to rebuild A1A with a wider multi-use sidewalk between Donald Ross Road and Indian Town? You can put that on your list of things to do. We've had several, and Jim, this would probably make you happy. We've had several phone calls from different constituents in the north end of the county, and A1A between Donald Ross and Indian Town is our beach road. And we have a sidewalk on one side that is used by pedestrians, bikers. We have sidewalk on the other that stops and starts and stops and starts. If people want to just travel north-south, they should be on US 1, but they're not because they want to travel where the beach is, but that's also where everybody who's using the beach is walking and biking. So just put it on your radar. I think you'd get support from the county, from county staff to help you with this. So there you have it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. No, you look into it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. as a reminder to the TPA board, it was maybe two meetings ago. So what are we in June now? April's TPA board meeting, where I was asked by one of the TPA board members, Commissioner Sachs, to actually do a review of all of the A1A throughout Palm Beach County for an opportunity to invest in pedestrian and bicycle facilities, because it's such a highly utilized corridor. And we have actually, we're in the process of doing that inventory and identifying those, the low hanging fruit, if you will, the potential segments of the road where those kinds of facilities could be built. That portion, I believe, is a county maintained road. And so we would have to work through Palm Beach County to ensure that the construction could be accomplished. And then it would be eligible for different funding sources. It's not a state road, so we would have to go through federal dollars or local dollars to build it. But we can certainly pursue that kind of project as an outcome of the study of the A1A that we are currently performing.
Mayor.
Yeah, I'm good.
Just to follow up on that, I want to express great gratitude for the commissioner bringing that one up, but I want to share a perspective, and I would certainly welcome independent opinions about this. What's happened and why the commissioner's getting communications from the public, as I am, is that there's a requirement to enforce bike lanes for bikers only that Jupiter has been very cautious over the years to do, because we encourage the neighborly, peaceful coexistence. I think, and that project was done, 20 years ago, and it's probably not much different than anybody else's. So we have the beach and we have, a bluff, and there's mangroves, there's the dune vegetation leading right to the edge of the sidewalk, and that's a turtle nesting area, so you got to keep the vegetation there. And then we have a sidewalk, we have parking that we wanted to have for the huge beach, we have a bike lanes, we have a two-lane road, and then we have the other side of the road. So the challenge is, quite frankly, and I hope I'm wrong, but so I love an independent, is there's no more right of way. And we're squeezing in a balance with everybody we think should be able to enjoy the beach. And, and everybody may have an opinion about, well, this one to that one should take a priority. And thus far, I can tell you as an elected official, we've preferred the peaceful coexistence of everybody. But we're working through with our police, which they have to enforce safety. So we do this about every year, is we have to kind of talk to people about their behaviors. Like, and most runners will acknowledge that they know they need to step out of the bike lane. So it's kind of a complicated issue, but I bet you it's not much different than the whole corridor. I would welcome independent. I'm not being closed-minded here, but I haven't been able to figure out a solution. Other than one thing could be provide parking somewhere else. But there's not a lot of options on that. So I just share that, Commissioner. But thank you very much for bringing this one up, because I'm struggling with it. It's easy when you can figure out a solution, side of cost.
It's a well-traveled area. And I know, because that's actually where I go to the beach. And, you have on-street parking, then you have a little bit of off-street parking where you have to actually turn from the road into these little, I don't even know what the term would be, areas where there's parking that, and it's used all the time. It's used 24/7. So anything we can do to help the safety of that road would be fabulous.
Kelly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for bringing this up, Commissioner. I'm a runner, so I have run that corridor and recognize that we do have similar problems in the city of West Palm Beach. So as we're looking at this, I know local roads in the city of West Palm Beach, but Flagler Drive, it's my understanding from neighbors that North Flagler Drive was on a list for the TPA a number of years ago before the economic downturn in 2008. And it still exists as it did back before 2008. And I think is a wonderful opportunity as the city of West Palm Beach invests in a lot of the assets around Curry Park, et cetera, going down through the downtown. If there is a way for us to work together with the TPA to, you know, improve all of our waterfront corridors, certainly would be supportive of that. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Comments? No? Okay. We'll move on to item G. Item G is a motion to approve the consent agenda. So if there's any member here who'd like to have an item removed from the consent agenda for review. If there isn't.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Oh, a motion to approve. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No opposed? Marge, you let the record show that the consent agenda was approved unanimously. With that, we'll move to item number 2A, which is, begins our action items. The first item is a resolution approving the fiscal year 22 to 26 transportation improvement program. We're going to have Jason Price come up and give us a walkthrough on this.
Morning, everyone. So this morning I'll present to you the final draft of the Transportation Improvement Program, and it covers a five-year period between 2022 to 2026. And as a reminder to the group that this is an action item that will require a vote at the end of this presentation and discussion, at which time I'll ask for a motion to adopt the document. And just a brief reminder to the group of the TPA's mission, and that is to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund the transportation system. And by way of adopting the Transportation Improvement Program, we are focusing on the funding aspect of the TPA's mission stated here on the screen. In addition, as part of adopting the final draft of the Transportation Improvement Program, as outlined in the TPA's public participation plan, the final draft before you today is presented as a whole document and can only be voted on as presented without changes. Additions and deletions can be considered at a future meeting after there is a public comment period to consider the proposed changes. And as part of the timeline of how we get here today, I presented a draft document to you last month, which is now in its final form for formal adoption this month in June. And once this document is adopted, we'll begin to operate under it in future months. And here's just a brief summary of the amount of funding in all of the different categories within the Transportation Improvement Program, with the majority of funds, as you see here on the slide, in the Strategic Intermodal System Capacity Projects. Now, from this slide, you can see them with the majority of funds in CIS Capacity. They are turnpike projects that make up the majority of those funding. And here is a summary slide. You'll see that about $696 million makes up the majority of those funds for turnpike widening projects, including three interchanges. The second largest is about 17 interchanges on I-95 that will be either new or modified as part of the strategic intermodal system projects. That's followed by I-95 widening studies from Linton Boulevard to Okeechobee Boulevard, as well as Indian Town Road to Martin County Line. There's also the Beeline Highway widening and Beeline North Lake intersection project as part of this for about $144 million. And that one of the last projects to highlight here is the State Route 80 turn lanes at Australian Avenue, as well as State Route 7. Now I'll go over the three TPA priority project sections, the first one being the state road modification projects. And in this particular section, there's approximately $190 million programmed in this document, with about $135 million in road construction that includes the State Route 7 extension project, as well as the Atlantic Avenue widening. That's followed by the 561 transit plan developed here by the TPA for specific corridors. And some of those corridors listed here is US 1, Okeechobee Boulevard, Lake Worth Road, and lastly, Boynton Beach Boulevard. There's also about $15 million programmed for the State Route 80 lighting project, and that was championed right here by the TPA Governing Board and is now being currently funded. And lastly, about $3 million for other state road modifications. This next section is the Local Initiatives Grant Program, and this is an annual competitive grant program with about $113 million in total funding in this document, with about $76.4 million in complete streets projects that include bicycle and pedestrian facilities, followed by some transit infrastructure projects that include the fair interoperability fare payment system for PalmTran, as well as new bus shelters, new electric buses for PalmTran, as well as new rolling stock for SFRTA that operates Tri-Rail. Following that, there's some signal upgrades for the city of Boca Raton and the town of Palm Beach. And lastly, the planning activities for the TPA, which includes our UPWP, or annual work program, as well as corridor studies conducted by the TPA. Now, the next is the partner program for the local initiatives is the Transportation Alternatives Annual Grant Program. And this is also an annual competitive grant program that has about the smaller amount of $18 million in funding, with about $15 million of that $18 million on complete streets projects that include bicycle and pedestrian facilities, followed by some enhancements in neighborhoods and transit shelters to bring those facilities up to ADA compliance. Now, some other construction highlights to review as part of the TIP document is all throughout Palm Beach County, and these will be constructed by Palm Beach County as well. The first ones are some resurfacing project on US 441 and Palmetto Park Road and Royal Palm Beach Boulevard, followed by some county road capacity projects. And these are all predominantly widening projects to 3 to 5 lanes, as you see here on the screen. And lastly, a bridge replacement project on the bottom here for County Road 880 over the C-51 canal. Well, that concludes the overview of all of the summary of the sections and the projects within the Transportation Improvement Program. And there is part of this presentation, the strategic plan action item for the TPA, and that's to review three specific tax mechanisms, and the first being the State Comprehensive Enhanced Transportation System Tax, or SCETS tax. Now, this particular tax is a tax that is collected in the county, and what we're ensuring is that the amount of funds collected in the county are spent in this county. And through our analysis, we do see that we are on target for the amount collected is being programmed within the county, with about $10.5 million left over. But that $10.5 million still is being spent within the county on district-wide projects. The other two parts to look at here is the I-95 express lanes in southern Palm Beach County, which are under construction. So no tolls have been collected, but once they begin to be collected, they are able to be used on specific items, and that is to operate, maintain, and improve the facility that they're collected on, followed by operating, maintaining, and improving the state highways within the counties in which those revenues are collected, followed by the support for express bus service on those specific corridors or within those facilities where the taxes are collected. And the last piece here is just an overview of MCORs, and that's the multi-use corridors for regional economic significance. And we're tracking this, although there's no MCORs within Palm Beach County, we're tracking the development of MCORs as it moves through legislation to ensure that there's no adverse impacts to the amount of funding being dedicated to construct MCORs and impacting the funding here for Palm Beach County projects. So with that, I'll conclude my presentation and ask for a motion to adopt the TIP document.
Move to adopt.
Before we move, do we have any comment cards submitted on this from the public?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't have any public comments at this time.
So you don't have any virtual or physical at this time?
No, Mr. Okay. Chair.
If that's the case, I'm closing public comment on this agenda item and ask for comments from members on the board. Questions, comments, if there are none.
I'm sorry.
I didn't see. It was hiding behind the computer. Go ahead.
First off, I'll second the motion. And one of the things that after my conversations with FDOT is that, they may not always explain for the pedestrians and bicyclists what is the most safe. And that's something that we have to have our engineering staff and the TPA to look to make sure that, there's a difference between a protected bike lane, a buffered bike lane, and a bike lane. And so I want to make sure that, we don't do what the city of Boynton, what we did here, and do it after the PD&E study, that we try to look at it before the PD&E study to ask FDOT to make sure we are getting what is the most safe alternative and that we can do the cost analysis.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to say thank you to this board and thank you to staff. There's a lot of really great projects on here, not only across the county, but for the city of West Palm Beach. I think the issue that continues to be of concern for the city of West Palm Beach is the extension of State Road 7, which I know we've had a number of discussions on. I won't belabor the discussion, but for the record, we still stand in opposition of that one particular issue on this plan. Thank you.
Any other comments? If not, we have a motion to adopt.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I do have that.
Commissioner, I'm sorry. McKinley. I'm not good on the cards today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you to your staff for putting together such a comprehensive plan. I'm excited to see so many projects in all parts of my district. And I just want to commend FDOT for their safety study that they did on State Market Road out in the Pahokee area. And they made some recommendations for possible projects that could be considered in future modifications to this plan, and would love to further that conversation at some point. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Help me if I'm missing a card. I see none. Okay. Excellent. You got a motion?
Motion was made and seconded.
All right, we have a motion to adopt and a second. Can we do the roll call?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So the motion on the floor is to adopt a resolution approving the fiscal year 22 to 26 transportation improvement program as presented. Before I call the roll, virtual members, if you can please unmute your microphones. And then those present in person, please remember to hit the base button, and when it's red, it's on. And please state either yes or no when I call your name. Steve Wilson?
Yes.
Scott Singer?
Yes.
Andy Thompson?
Yes.
Stephen Grant?
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry. Julie Casale? Julie Casale? I have her unmuted, but I don't have her.
Okay.
Commissioner, can you hear me? I'll come back to her just in case. Joel Flores?
Yes.
Jim Koretsky?
Yes.
Christopher McVoy?
Yes.
Joni Brinkman?
Yes.
Catherine Waldron?
Yes.
Marcy Tinsley?
Yes.
Melissa McKinley?
Yes.
Maria Marino?
Yes.
Maria Sachs?
Yes.
Greg Weiss?
No, due to the proposed alignment of the State Road 7 extension.
Douglas Lawson is absent. Michael Napoleon?
Yes.
Kelly Shove?
No, due to the extension of State Road 7.
I have Commissioner Peduzzi is absent. And then we'll go back to Julie Casale. because I don't have her verbal vote, I will mark her as absent. I'm not sure. She is present and she did unmute, but for some reason we can't hear her virtually. And then Robert Weinroth?
Yes.
Fred Pinto?
Yes.
It passes with two opposed.
Okay, thank you very much. Moving on to item B. Here we're looking for a motion to adopt a resolution affirming TPA support for the Atlantic Avenue project, Florida's Turnpike to Jog Road, with requested modifications to build alternatives.
Motion to adopt.
We're going to get a presentation first from FDOT, from Tuck Lee. Is that virtual? Oh, here he is.
Good morning. My name is Tuck Lee. I haven't done this often. Good morning. My name is Tuck Lee. I'm the project manager from FDOT. I'm here to present to you the State Road A06, the Atlantic Avenue reconstruction to mitigate congestion that starts from Florida Turnpike to York Road, approximately 2 miles 30. Along with me this morning, the project team represent DOT. They have been working on this study, the study that be conformed to the NEPA process. And we, a part of the study, we have met, engaged with the stakeholders, including the Alliance of Delray, that's a HOA associations. In Delray, Lakewood Drainage District, TPA. Part of the study, we're gonna present this finding to the public, and we have two meetings scheduled. One is virtual that we're gonna be go before this schedule for June 28th of 2021, and the next day in person, June 29, 2021. And, with that, I'm gonna send it over to the project team to present to you this morning.
Thank you, Tuck. Good morning, we're excited to be here and we'll go ahead and move forward. So this morning, we wanna talk to you a little bit about the project, the traffic projections and the proposed build alternatives followed up by the schedule. So the project purpose, we're here to address capacity needs to meet existing and future travel demand. So we're looking to widen Atlantic Avenue from 4 to 6 lanes and improve the local and regional transportation network while providing not only enhancing safety for vehicles, but as well for bicyclists and pedestrians. So the project is needed to relieve congestion. Certain segments of this corridor are already over capacity. This project is identified in the Palm Beach TPA's 2045 LRTP. This will improve emergency evacuation as it provides a connection to the Turnpike, which is a strategic intermodal system facility. There's currently an existing sidewalk gap from Michelangelo Boulevard to west of Jog Road on the south side of Atlantic Avenue. So we're going to be looking to complete that gap, and by including sidewalks as well as buffered bicycle lanes on both sides of the corridor. So a little bit about the project. As Tuck had mentioned, this is from Turnpike to Jog Road. The project is within unincorporated Palm Beach County. As I mentioned, we're looking to do 4 to 6 lane widening, improve bicycle and pedestrian features. The corridor is approximately 1.8 miles in length. The right-of-way varies, as noted here, between 113 and 175 feet. The context classification, which we're designing for, is a C3C. This is an urban principal arterial with a posted speed limit of 45 miles per hour. So this is our project development process flowchart. The planning phase has already been completed. We're now in the PD&E phase, which is approximately a two-year process. This will be followed by design and right-of-way, and then ultimately to the construction phase, which is another 2 to 4 years. So here we're showing the no build design year, which is our design year is 2045, the lane configuration and delay, as well as level of service. So this is depicting what will happen in the year 2045 under no improvements. And you'll notice that several of these intersections, which are marked in the purplish pink color, we're not achieving acceptable level of service at these intersections under the existing conditions. So in the build condition, by adding an additional through lane in each direction, you'll notice significant improvement at all of the intersections with the exception of Jog Road, where we would still have a failing level of service in the design year 2045, just by adding a through lane in each direction. So we want to talk a little bit about the intersection of Jog Road, some of the alternatives. And before we want to do that, we're just going to go over some of the existing features of this location. One of the things we want to point out is there's an existing westbound left turn lane just west of Jog Road that turns into the Kings Point Shopping Center in the southwest corner. And you'll also notice the Seville Terrace intersection just further west, which is another signalized intersection. And there's also a signalized intersection just south of Atlantic Avenue on Jog Road. So these are some of the locations that we're going to be discussing regarding the next few alternatives that we're going to talk about. So this is the first one. As I had mentioned, this is just showing an additional through lane in each direction. The existing turn lane configuration out there today is dual left turns at all of the approaches. So this concept would maintain the existing dual left turns at all approaches and will only add the through lane, additional through lane eastbound and westbound on Atlantic Avenue. Looking at these circles with the numbers associated with them, the location number one is that westbound turn, which I mentioned that goes into the Kings Point Shopping Center. As part of this, we would have to close that existing left turn lane in order to provide longer storage for the dual left turns to go eastbound to northbound on Jog Road. As such, we would be looking to add a second left turn lane at Seville Terrace to help accommodate some of those U-turns that would be needed since that location would be closed at location one. At Circle 3, the existing signalized intersection, in order to accommodate the dual lefts on Jog Road to go northbound to westbound, we would have to close that intersection to extend the turn lane lengths there. That is one of the heaviest movements at this intersection. If we do not extend the turn lanes and keep that signalized intersection open, those left turns will spill back onto the main line in the design year 2045. And the other thing noted here, circle number four, that's basically where we're putting in the additional westbound turn lane. It's currently a two throughs with a right turn. So that right turn lane would then just be reconstructed and the existing right would become the new through lane. One thing I did forget to mention regarding this alternative is that it will not achieve the acceptable level of service in the design year 2045, which was, as I had mentioned, in the previous graphics. So one of the things that we came up with as an innovative concept to help meet the future travel demands at this intersection is what we call a partial displaced left turn. Some of you may know of this as another term as a CFI, continuous flow intersection. So basically what it does is it takes the left turn movements eastbound and westbound and crosses them over into a separate left turn storage where while those left turns are being made, the through movements on the main line are also happening concurrently. By doing this, it's helping to achieve acceptable level of service. So here we're just trying to demonstrate what that operation is. It will introduce another signal at the main intersection for those left turns where they're being displaced. This will accommodate bicyclists where they will still be able to ride along the bike lane if they desire to, or they can ride on the sidewalk. There's also islands where pedestrians will be able to take refuge across the right turn lanes as shown. So this is some of the associated access issues related to the PDLT alternative. You'll notice that number one, there's an existing left turn to turn into the Atlantic Square Shopping Center. That would now need to be closed in order to accommodate the dual lefts for the displaced left turns. Going on to the other side, the number two is similar to what was shown in the previous alternative, where we would still have to close that directional left turn into the Kings Point Shopping Center. Circle number three, in order for us to provide adequate left turn storage for the left turn crossover, we will not have enough turn storage length for the existing lefts into Seville's Terrace. So as such, we would have to close the left-bound turn westbound into Seville Terrace at this location. The left turns out of Seville Terrace will still be able to operate. Due to the closure of that left turn movement, the turns would have to take place further west at the Cumberland Drive intersection, where they would have to make a U-turn to come back. Location number four is similar to the previous intersection, as we mentioned. Due to the left turn lengths that we need to accommodate this movement, we would have to close that signalized intersection as well. And this concept will achieve acceptable level of service operationally in the year 2045. So this is a kind of a, one thing I'd want to go back on this is you'll notice the right-of-way acquisition in the northwest quadrant. There's also some right-of-way takes on the northeast as well as on the bottom two quadrants. So there are going to be some impacts related to right-of-way on this alternative. So what we did is we developed this, which is a little bit less aggressive. It maintains in the conventional style intersection as it is today, but instead of having dual left turns at all approaches, we're now incorporating triple left turns at all approaches. So we have expanded the intersection here. It's going to have less right-of-way impacts than the PDLT alternative. However, it still will not achieve acceptable level of service in the design year 2045, but it will improve the delay over the existing dual left turn configuration that's out there today. You'll notice, again, some of those access points. The number one, we would still have to close the left turn into Kings Point. Number two, we would introduce that second left turn lane to accommodate some of the U-turns that would be needed due to the closure at number one. And again, at location number three, we would still have to close that signalized intersection in order to accommodate the left turn movement by extending that storage length. One of the things on this is you'll notice that northwest quadrant, the right-of-way takes are minimal. It's pretty much limited to just at the location where the two legs intersect. There's a tiny little sliver there. There still will be some takes at the southwest corner, but along Jog Road, because we're adding the triple lefts, we have to shift the alignment on the northbound direction a little bit to the east. So there will be some right-of-way acquisition from the Atlantic Square Shopping Center, as well as on the north leg of Jog Road behind some of the residential property north of Atlantic Avenue. So this is the typical section that we're looking to propose. This is based on some of the initial coordination that we've had with the TPA. This is showing 11-foot travel lanes, six 11-foot travel lanes, a 22-foot median, 7-foot buffered bike lanes with a 10-foot sidewalk on the south side and an 8-foot sidewalk on the north side. This typical section is what we're calling the best fit alignment, which was what we looked at in terms of what can we do to utilize some of the existing right-of-way on the north side where there's not going to be any physical impacts to businesses their parking lots, things of that nature. So it's going to utilize some of that green space where we would just be limited to right-of-way acquisition and relocation of signs and utilities, things of that nature. One of the constraints with, in addition to the businesses and properties on the north side, is the Lake Worth Drainage District L34 canal on the south side. We have had several meetings with them, and we're still in close coordination with Lake Worth Drainage District regarding how we're going to address the right-of-way reduction in the canal. Their desire is to maintain 75 feet with a 35-foot maintenance berm on the south side, 30 feet for the channel of the canal, as well as 10 feet on the north side of the canal. Here, as you see, that right-of-way in the proposed condition will vary anywhere from 55 to 90 feet. So in areas where we will not achieve the 75-foot minimum, which is desired by LWDD, we would be looking to pipe the canal. And in the areas where we do have the 75-foot minimum, we would still be looking to realign the canal in order to give the 35-foot maintenance berm on the south side. So those discussions are still taking place with Lake Worth Drainage District. And they're currently, you know, taking a look at what we propose with this condition. The next typical section, the geometric elements are the same as before with the 11-foot lanes, 22-foot median, buffered bike lanes, and the 10 and 8-foot sidewalks. This is from Cumberland to Jog Road. The only key difference here is we don't have that canal on the south side. There's only a ditch out there, which Lake Worth Drainage District is okay with us piping that existing ditch. You'll notice there's still going to be some right-of-way take on the north side and the south side, some small slivers within this section from Cumberland to Jog Road. The next one is the south alignment. And this was what we looked at in terms of what can we do if we just hold the northern right-of-way line and do all of the widening to the south side into the Lake Worth Drainage District right-of-way. So you'll notice there is a still a small area of take of right-of-way on the north side, and that's only to get through some of the transitions from the east side going into the west. But once we get through that transition area, which is very short, and you'll notice the right-of-way take is very short, all of the take would be done on the south side. So this typical section is similar to the other, with just the exception of the varying of the right-of-way going further into the canal right-of-way. Everything else still applies with the 75-foot restrictions and so forth, and the design elements, as I mentioned, in terms of the geometric features here, are all still the same as before. And that also applies with the segment from Cumberland to Jog Road. You'll just notice that the right-of-way on the north side from the previous alignment was 0 to 11 feet. We're now down 0 to 6. And then on the Lake Worth Drainage District side, the numbers have increased slightly since we're doing that shift to the south. So this is alternatives comparison, where we're looking at the no-build condition, which is still a potential alternative, compared with the best fit alignment or the south alignment. You'll notice there's a lot of improvements here regarding vehicle safety, improvement to traffic flow. The bike ped features, obviously, as I mentioned, we're going to be filling in that gap from Michelangelo Boulevard to Jog Road, where there's currently not a sidewalk on the south side. We're going to be putting in those 7-foot buffered bike lanes and expanding on the existing sidewalk widths as well. So that's some of the benefits for the bike ped safety. We don't really have much environmental issues on this project. As far as construction goes, the best fit alignment will be a little bit cheaper as shown here than the south alignment due to the amount of piping and fill and so forth for the relocation of the canal. So here's some of the PD&E study components. We are looking at the engineering, the environmental, as well as the public involvement. That's an ongoing process right now. As Took Lee mentioned at the start of this presentation, there's a public alternatives workshop, which is scheduled for June 29th, which is online. At the time this presentation was developed, it was still tentative, but that date is now been confirmed. So we look to get everybody's support and come out and provide your input. And it'll also be in person on June 29th, the following day, at the Hagen Ranch Road Branch Library off of just north of Atlantic Avenue on Hagen Ranch Road. And our public hearing for this project is tentatively scheduled for November-December timeframe of this year. So some of the public involvement activities that have taken place, as I mentioned, we've been coordinating with Lake Worth Drainage District, and those discussions are still taking place. We've had meetings with Palm Beach County, as well as Palm Beach TPA staff meetings in the past, which is how we've come up with what we've developed so far. The local government coordination was still ongoing. You know, meetings with the public and so forth is still gonna go until the end of this project. Down at the bottom, we have the project website, which will provide more information on this project as it moves along. And it'll also give you information on how to attend the virtual or the online public meeting on June 28th, if you haven't already gotten that information. So this is some of the entities that we're coordinating with, mainly the Palm Beach TPA, Palm Beach County, Lake Worth Drainage District staff, as well as some of the others that you see here listed in this slide. Our timeline and funding, this project was initiated in February of 2020. We're now in this, you know, tail end of the springtime getting into summer, where we're looking at having our public workshop, as I mentioned. And our anticipated completion date for this project is June 2022. Future phases will include design, which is funded for fiscal year 2022. And at this time, construction is unfunded for this project. And with that, as we mentioned, you know, Took Lee is our project manager now. He's now recently taken over this project. This is his contact information. You may also contact the FDOT communications manager for any questions. And with that, we want you to, you know, follow the department's safety message for the summer, which slow down, stay cool, and be safe. And with that, we'll open it up to any questions the board may have. Thank you.
All right. We're going to hear another presentation.
Mr. Chair, we actually are requesting a motion by the TPA board following a presentation of staff perspective. We wanted to give a little bit additional perspective.
Okay.
The way a user may experience the project as it's proposed. And I do want to remind the TPA board that this is a TPA board priority project. It's not just a project in our long range plan, but it's something that this board has said we want to invest in this additional capacity to accommodate the growth and development that has been occurring within the areas west of the Turnpike along the Atlantic Avenue corridor. But we also want to ensure that we're providing a balanced investment in infrastructure so that we're providing safety for those vulnerable users while we're providing the additional capacity for the development impacts that that are coming. So we have a staff presentation. If we could do that, I know a number of board members have comments to make, but I think we might answer some of the questions in our presentation.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Connor Campobasso with the Palm Beach TPA, and I'm a long-range transportation planner here. All right. So today, the TPA is seeking a resolution affirming TPA support for the Atlantic Avenue project with requested modifications. So you just watched the DOT presentation, but I did want to highlight some of the background features of this project. As mentioned, in 2016, this was a priority for the TPA to widen the road from 4 to 6 lanes. The PD&E is going on right now because of the potential use of federal funds to implement the project. And the TPA does support the project itself with two recommended modifications. The first being for the typical section to provide continuous sidewalks of at least 10 feet in width in lieu of the on-street buffer between the vehicle lane and the bicycle lane within the project limits. And then the second for the jog road intersection to eliminate any components of the build alternatives with significant adverse impacts to pedestrian safety, bicyclist safety, as well as private land ownership rights. So it was kind of mentioned earlier today, the context classification of this roadway, and it is a C3 And what that means, it's more of a suburban area, and it has certain features that makes it a C3. So it includes things like large blocks, disconnected roadway network, large parking lots, wider roads, and typically contains medium to faster speeds. In this area, I believe it's about 45 miles an hour posted. So, So the geometry of the typical section itself pretty much stays the same throughout the different sections of the roadway. So I just took a little snippet of the typical section that you can see here as DOT design. And it does include adequate space for the pedestrians, as well as a 7-foot buffered bike lane for the cyclists. The issue is that given the context of this roadway, we don't necessarily think that a lot of cyclists will utilize the buffered bike lane to the large travel lanes, high speeds, as well as the improvements that are being done at the intersection of Atlantic and Jog. So what we are proposing is a different typical, slightly adjusted, similar lane width, similar lane count. However, we're going to be allocating, we're seeking to allocate the buffered section of the bike lane to the sidewalk, giving both pedestrians as well as less comfortable cyclists more space on the side of the road away from traffic, but still maintaining that bike lane for cyclists that really want to be located on the roadway. And we're doing this for a few reasons, and I kind of alluded to some of them earlier. And there's also a third alternative, but I'll talk about that in a minute here. So given the DOT design, it does provide a lot of space for very comfortable riders that ride fast. It's 7 feet with a buffer, so they can move it around debris, slower cyclists, things like that. And it is also consistent with the FDM. The downside to this is a lot of cyclists, we believe, in this area will most likely be riding on the sidewalk, which in the northern section of the typical is only 8 feet. And if there's pedestrians on that sidewalk, there's going to be a lot of conflicts between the bicyclists and the pedestrians. So we want to allocate as much space as possible to those low-speed cyclists, to those pedestrians that might be on that sidewalk. So that's kind of what you see in the TPA alternative. Less friction for the different users that will be utilizing it. The downside with the TPA alternative is that there will be less space for those dedicated roadway riders, as well as it isn't exactly consistent with the FDM. The third typical I do have on here is something that's been discussed a little bit, but it is a dedicated multi-use path. There's some pros and cons to this as well. All the users will be expected to be on the multi-use path, which separates everybody from the roadway. However, for those high-speed cyclists that really want to be on the roadway, there's no facility for them to utilize. This also creates a little bit more friction for pedestrians and those low-speed cyclists that are on the sidewalk, or in this case, the pathway, since there will be those high-speed cyclists expected to be there as well. Now, this typical is consistent with the FDM. However, the physical barrier that's pictured in the image to the left is not supported. So that would have to take some additional work as well. So changing gears a little bit here, I want to now talk about the Atlantic and Jug intersection. So there was three proposed alternatives shown today. So there was the dual lefts, the triple lefts, and the displaced lefts. And they're kind of in ascending order of impacts to improvements for the congestion management. So the dual left, it provides the least amount of congestion management, but it also is the least amount of impacts to pedestrians, comfort, to the cyclists, to right-of-way impacts, as well as predicted to be the lowest cost alternative. Now for the triple lefts, it actually provides more access, especially to the south on Jog Road. There's an intersection, I don't know if it was highlighted in the DOT presentation, but there's this intersection that actually remains open to the south along Jog Road. So it actually provides more access to businesses and still maintains that typical cycling experience. The pedestrians will have to cross longer lengths. There'll be an additional lane in the north-south section and also adds some more conflicts for the pedestrians as well. It does improve the congestion a little bit, more so than the dual lefts, but it also does cost a little bit more. Now for the displaced lefts, it really has one job, and that is to alleviate congestion. And given the study itself, it seems to do that pretty well. Unfortunately, it seems to adversely impact all the other users in the corridor. It forces the pedestrians to cross longer distances. It makes them cross free flow right turns. It creates an unfamiliar cycling condition for bicyclists. It also eliminates several movements, mostly left in and left out movements along the corridor for the businesses. It also has major right-of-way impacts for those businesses, as well as the taking of potentially 8 residential lots, and is also projected to be the highest cost alternative. So with that, we are requesting a motion to adopt a resolution, again, affirming the TPA support for this project with the requested modifications. And so there's really two parts to it. There's a modification to the typical section itself, and then there's a modification to the intersection itself. And in the typical modification, there's two options listed here. So there's what I'll call 1A, which is for the typical section, provide continuous sidewalks of at least 10 feet in width and 5-foot on-street bike lanes or within the scope limits. And then 1B, which is for the typical section, provide continuous shared use pathway of at least 10 feet in width and no on-street bike lanes within the project limits. And that is my presentation for today. I'll leave this up on the slide so you can continue to take a look at it, but I'll take any questions.
Okay, so we have a lot of questions. I'm not sure who was first, but we'll start with you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the excellent presentations. And as was mentioned earlier, this is well overdue and much needed. But I have a few questions. Why is there a 22-foot median?
I guess I'll direct that to DOT.
DOT, yes.
Okay.
And Commissioner Weiss, while they're coming up, the short answer is it's to accommodate a 2-stage left turn at any median openings that exist within the 6-lane roadway. So a car turning out in a full median opening will be able to turn into the median at an angle and be protected from any of the through traffic while waiting for a gap in the second portion of the roadway where they can complete that left turn movement. So that's what drives the 22-foot wide median.
Are there a
lot? I'll let them supplement that, but that's.
I mean, as somebody, you know, I've driven that road numerous times. Is there a lot of those areas? And would we save right away by having them go down the road and make a U-turn?
That's a question I don't have the answer to off the top of my head.
Good morning. I'm Rudy Guttmurray. I think, Nick, you explained it the best. It is,
but how many driveways are there that would require that?
Throughout the corridor, on the northern side, there are all the businesses. And on the south side of the Atlantic Avenue, there are a lot of residential communities. So I think within the corridor, we have almost 7 major intersections. And there are some directional median openings that are turning. If you're going eastbound, they're going to the north to access all those businesses, some communities, parking lots. So they're significant within the 1.8 miles.
I think it really should be looked at. I don't remember seeing that many openings coming along that stretch of roadway would justify 22 feet for the entire length of that area. I think there's, because you are looking to have to acquire right of way, and potentially by using that 22 feet, you may not have to require it. So that's one thing I'd like to bring up. Do we have any counts as to bicycle usage on that area or pedestrians?
No, there is no pedestrian count. We do have some intersection counts at just intersection locations, how many people crossed, but that's the data is available, not all along the corridor.
I mean, I like to have data available to help drive decision-making, and think it would make sense that we would have at least some sense of and what your predictions would be by doing these things. But those are my questions. Thanks.
Thank you. I mean, I think this is an opportunity for us as a board to decide whether we're going to give the vehicles or the pedestrians the attention that they deserve. PDLT obviously would be the decision we would make if we didn't care about pedestrians, but it seems that's the most efficient way of moving the vehicles through this intersection, the jog, and it would keep the intersection running at appropriate levels of service to 45. But I think that we need to balance the pedestrians and the bicyclists in here, no matter how many are there at this point. I have some problems with taking away the area for the bicyclist and reducing it down. If anything, I'd like to see some way of protecting that lane. And if we're going to be putting in, again, we're doing some re-engineering here. We're talking over and over about, you know, studying why we're killing a bicyclist in the county. Here's a perfect opportunity of where we could engineer something to try and protect some bicyclists. And I would like to see us consider some sort of physical partition between the motor vehicles and the bicyclists. And I'm surprised that that's not an alternative that's being suggested at this point. Is there a reason why this is not something that FDOT sees as an opportunity in this intersection?
That's a great question. We did, as a part of when we started this project for the first 6-7 months, we worked with TPA. We developed six various typical I think it was 5-6 different various typical section options. And physically separated bike lane was also one of the options. And we kind of did a preliminary evaluation. If we go with a physically separated bike lane, how would that be consistent with the segment of Atlantic Avenue to the west, as well as to the east? Because right now, there is a on-street bike lane to the west of our project limits. So from the consistency point of view, as well as when you're going into this physical separation or when we are evaluating a multi-use pathway, the FDM design criteria also calls for, and that criteria is based on safety, nationwide studies, and of course approved by Federal Highway about some horizontal separations that you would like. And we consider all that and look at the impact, what it will have on the right of way, as well as one of the biggest stakeholder on this project is Lakeport Drainage District, who would like to maintain a 75-foot canal right of way. So we evaluated all that, and I think we had, three, four meetings to discuss at that time before we started the alternatives analysis. And the typical section that today is presented is something was a compromise between five, six different typical sections we evaluated to move forward for further evaluation.
Nick, it just seems to me that the alternative being placed before us by TPA staff goes even further away from safety, taking more space away from the bicyclists. And I'm wondering how you can justify that.
Mr. Chair, if I could briefly respond. It's an interesting challenge. And I'm going to refer back to the graphic that we had of the typical cyclists within our community. We actually see, I'm going to introduce the board to a term that I'm probably going to regret later, but we use this acronym in discussion sometimes, middle-aged men in Lycra, or we call them mammals. They're recreational cyclists.
I see some jaws dropped.
They're recreational cyclists that really like to ride fast on the roadway. And what you end up with is that's that aggressive enthusiastic crowd, the 5 to 10% of our population at most, who don't want any sort of physical separation between the bicycle facility and the vehicle lane, because they want to be able to overtake slower cyclists and dodge debris at 20 to 30 miles per hour. And they are advocating strongly against any sort of physical barrier that would be introduced in the roadway. That being said, we have probably 50% of our population who would really like to ride to their destinations and back home, but just don't feel comfortable riding on the roadway next to cars. And so the proposed option that we suggested was that a 5-foot bike lane was an adequate amount of space for those aggressive cyclists who will not ride on the sidewalk. They just won't. But that if we can allocate the additional space in the right-of-way to the sidewalk area, then we've actually created a wider space for those people uncomfortable with riding on the roadway to negotiate the pedestrian conflicts that exist on the sidewalk while they're riding their bicycles at lower speeds. So we were trying to accommodate the different users and allocate space according to their percentage in the population. But we recognize that it is a conversation about trade-offs. And so that's why we presented the alternatives to the TPA board, so that we could get some more guidance from the from the collective discussion by our elected officials in the community.
I'm not even going to comment on that typical bicyclist. I've got that vision in my head, but I think that we need to step back and not just worry about the 10%. Aggressive 10%. The people who are getting killed on our roadways are those other drivers, are those other riders, and we keep on having this conversation about how we're going to keep this number from growing. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going in the wrong direction with this engineering.
To be continued.
If I may speak, can you hear me? This is Commissioner Sachs.
Speak, please.
Thank you very much. I absolutely agree with Vice Mayor Weinlauf. And I've had this discussion over and over again with members of the TPA. This is something that we need to revisit because we can't have a conversation at one part of the meeting when we discuss how many bicyclists are being hit and killed. And then at the other time of our meeting, we discuss putting bicyclists to compete with vehicles on a road that is heavily, heavily traveled. So I agree with Vice Mayor Weinroth, and this is something that we're going to need to have more study. And I agree with the commissioner, also Commissioner Weiss, when it comes to being data driven. So I think this we need to revisit this. We need to study this more. We need to have a thorough discussion and possibly debate on it because we need to protect our bicyclists, no matter what age they are or what outfits they're wearing when they're bicycle. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway.
Thank you. And, the point that I'd like to make is that, you know, we want protected bike lanes. There's a difference term between buffered and protected. And I think where we are moving forward is protected bike lanes. And that's not saying that the 5-foot bike lane can't be 6 inches above the road. You know, I don't know if there's a PD&E in regards to that 5-foot protected bike lane next to the road, which allows the people to have a shared use, a wide sidewalk for pedestrians and bicyclists or just pedestrians. But I think the protected bike lane is something that this board is really in favor for because we have the Vision Zero. The other comment that I would want to have, and so hopefully when you have your meetings, you give the public that alternative for the protected bike lane and what that means. In addition, big thing that I've been trying to do is the landscaping that FDOT does, the tree canopy. You're talking, next to a canal. I don't necessarily know if Lake Worth Drainage District wants to have trees on their land, but this is something that if we are having a place for pedestrians and bicyclists, you look up on this road in Atlantic Avenue, there are trees in the medians. There are trees to the south of the canal. We need to worry about the stormwater. We need to worry about our resiliency and sustainability for our environment. And so could you please tell us how FDOT is planning to use their required landscape funding for this project? Because, you know, I've seen the, you know, FDOT's landscape improvement plan, and normally they don't put the landscape with the projects. They do it whenever, you know, whatever they feel is best within the 5 years. So that's something that I would also want to be as part of the this, you know, the presentations to the public. It's when is there going to be landscape, if any, and what can we do to get it? And the last kind of point for me is that the FDOT's alternatives comparison, their red and green shades were too close together for me to really decipher the difference. I am red, green colorblind. I can know with our signal, the green's on top and the red's on the bottom, but I wasn't able to tell the difference. So if you could use different colors or 1, 2, 3, 4, I think that might make it easier for some people.
Thank you. We do have an evaluation matrix that we're going to present at the alternatives workshop, whether it's going to be a virtual or in person. And there's a detailed evaluation matrix. When we put that evaluation matrix on a slide here, it's very difficult to read anything trying to make sense. So that's why we use those colors. But your suggestion about ranking is, we will utilize that next time.
All right. Thank you. And I guess, do you have an answer to my question regarding the canopy and protected bike lanes as part of the presentation?
As we discussed, I think I just mentioned, we did look at one of the typical section alternatives providing a protected bike lane. I think TPA staff was part of all that discussions. We looked at six different typical sections. I don't have the list. But then to get the best compromise of right-of-way impacts not just on the roadway on the north side, but also the Lakewood Drainage District. They're wanting to move their water, avoid flooding. The typical section that we used was the compromise that we used for the analysis. But answer to your question, we did look at that and we did present and we did discuss in our previous meeting, but looking at the impacts versus needs versus wants. So what we presented today was the compromise we had 6-7 months ago, and we moved forward with our alternatives analysis with the typical. And another thing I would like to add, the section of the roadway to the west of this project and section of a roadway to the east of this project, they all have similar features, what we are proposing. So there's also a consistency of expectations for pedestrians and bicyclists and users. So we kind of also looked at that when that compromise decision was made between the FDOT and the TPA and the design team. That was the best typical at that point was considered.
Okay. So I don't know if that answered my question. I'll ask my question again. Are you presenting protected bike lanes as part of the presentation to the public?
No, that was not the typical section. I think we presented here is the typical that will be presented.
I want to get all the comments in because I think I'm going to ask this board to make some determinations on this. Sir, you are next.
Yeah, I hesitate to go into the clothing and age of bicyclists thing, but I very much more seriously do agree from being out, there are different groups of bicyclists with very different approaches to it. And as I think we've seen this in New York City, some that bicyclists themselves can be a hazard to other pedestrians or bicycles, slower bicycles. And the mentality, the speeds make for different things. So I do think it's something that needs revisiting. I don't know what the right answer is. Obviously, I'm very much for protecting bicyclists. But how best to do that, I don't think is totally clear. I do think it needs to be data driven on, and I think you made a good start in the slide that was presented that, you know, tried to put some approximate percentages of which categories of bicycles. I think the categories of bicycles are pretty realistic from my experience. So I commend you on making an effort to address that. Not sure that I have the, you know, any brilliant solutions, but thank you for looking at it. Keep at it. And I think it does need further discussion by the group.
Yeah, I have 3 points I want to make, and I guess the best way to, I'm speaking to FDOT right now, is the best way I would like to see this is as a holistic way of viewing this. I feel like when you guys present to us, it's usually all about roads and moving traffic. But as you can see, this board is very interested in protecting our pedestrians and our bicyclists. I really want to echo what Commissioner Weinroth said. I think we should concentrate on 90-95% of the bicyclists who are not aggressive, and I think it's our right and duty to protect these individuals. As we saw the statistics at the last meeting, the numbers are not going down. We're talking about Vision Zero, but yeah, we continue to have these issues on the road. The casualties are continuing to stay steady or increase rather than decrease. So I would like FDOT to, when you guys present, similar to the way that you presented us three alternatives for the road, how to move vehicles from point A to point B, I would like to see alternatives very similar to how the TPA presented alternatives for bicyclists and pedestrians. I would like to see that also presented, and definitely protected bike lanes. I think what Mayor Grant said, Commissioner Weinroth said, I think that's true. I feel that most of us feel the same way here in this board. Right away, I believe you're one of your options, you were talking about removing 8 homes. Homes in Palm Beach County at an all-time prime. If that happened today, I don't know what these 8 families would have to do to go find a home. Because right now, I know people that have placed bids on homes and they can't seem to be able to purchase a home. The inventory of homes here is crazy. We have an influx of people moving in, which I think at some point it correlates to transportation. So I would like us to also kind of have a gauge on that too. But yeah, right away, I don't see how I can support removing 8 people from their home. So, and then the last comment I wanted to make was landscaping. Our Mayor Grant, he's brought up this point several times. FDOT has funds to invest in landscaping, and it seems like anytime you guys present anything, it has nothing in there with landscaping and how we environmentally also invest into the community. So I'd like FDOT to also make that part of the plans moving forward. Thank you.
I'm done.
I have John Crane from FDOT.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. I'm John Crane. I'm the District 4 Planning and Environmental Administrator. I just wanted to, you know, thank the board for all your input. We've got the design or the PD&E team here today, you know, obviously to hear that feedback. I just wanted to address a couple of issues, you know, to let you know that we haven't taken a callous approach to this project, right? Our standard typical section for something like this, you know, look further east would be, you know, a 6-foot sidewalk on each side and nothing but traffic lanes. And so so that you understand, we have seriously worked with the TPA staff to come up with the typical sections, which we did bring before you today. There was a comment about the wide right of way or the wide medians approaching the intersections. I wanted to note for you that as we get to an intersection like Jog Road, you need to have enough right of way there to help develop the left turn and right turn movements. So that's part of the reason for the 22 foot median, but we heard your comment and we will look at, you know, if there's options to reduce that to help accomplish some of the objectives that were stated here today. As it relates to accommodating the bicyclists, you know, we have developed, you know, wider sidewalks on both sides of the roadway, 10 foot on the one side and 8 foot on the other, in response to the TPA's request to, you know, help the non-aggressive bicyclists, right? And so there's definitely a concern, you know, that we are all Vision Zero, and we're serious about that, as just as the TPA is. And so that those are reasons that we have developed the wider sidewalk. There are standards that we need to meet as part of our design. You know, there's engineers that have to, you know, put their names on here, and there's state laws that talk about liability and accommodating all users, you know, the aggressive cyclists and the non-aggressive cyclists. So one of the things that's going to be a little more challenging for us to accommodate is a 5 foot bicycle lane on a state highway that's non-buffered. Our standard is a 7 foot bicycle lane. And it, you know, if for some reason an aggressive cyclist or even a non-aggressive cyclist decides to ride in the road, if they are injured or worse, you know, killed, and they're riding in a 5 foot bike lane where we didn't provide a standard 7 foot or 5 foot buffered bike lane, that would be problematic as well. So as we work to balance all the needs of the users, even if it's only a 10% usage, right, of all the users, we are working to provide the wider sidewalks, and we're still continuing to work with the TPA to address their concerns. But I just wanted to touch on a couple of those issues and let you know that we hear what you're saying here today, and we'll continue to work with you to address that. We do have our alternatives public workshop scheduled. So I don't know how much of your comments we can accommodate in all the presentation materials that will be presented to the public, but we can certainly speak to those areas that the TPA board has requested as part of our conversation with the public to help get their feedback on what, you know, let them know what their elected officials have requested and, you know, get their input on that as well. So with that, I'll yield the floor.
Thank you, sir, for your comments. Commissioner?
Thank you. One question and then one comment. So to DOT, in reference to Mayor Flores's comments, are you looking at doing eminent domain for those 8 homes, or would that only move forward with willing sellers?
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me speak to that point as well. So as part of the PD&E process, we have to look at all viable alternatives. And so one of those is, you know, accommodating the traffic flow. But we're also looking, that's why we showed you three typical sections, three alternatives today. So if that were the recommended alternative going forward, we always, you know, we would have to follow the Uniform Act as it relates to right-of-way acquisition. That would be offering a fair price value. If they are a non-willing seller at that point, then we would go through the eminent domain process. But that's only if this were the recommended alternative, right? This is the study before the design, and we're weighing all the alternatives right now. And we'll come up with a recommended alternative at the end of this. And our, you know, the feedback we've received today is certainly part of the administrative record that's being built for this project, the alternatives workshop. You know, we would certainly encourage as many of the elected officials that wish to participate in that and be heard before their constituents, you know, to attend that workshop as well. You know, all the public outreach that we are doing as part of the project will become part of that administrative record and help us make that ultimate recommended alternative.
Okay, thank you. I just a compliment. You know, in terms of how this project is designed, I'm going to defer to the people whose districts and cities are most impacted by this. But I just want to commend TPA staff and FDOT staff and Secretary O'Reilly and his team I'm growing increasingly frustrated with my county engineer. I've got two road projects in my district. One is the extension of Lyons Road at some point between Pearson and Lake Worth Road. The second one is the widening of Coconut between North Lake and Orange. And despite several conversations, despite a study by the Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council with the Indian Trail Improvement District and trying to come up with very thoughtful road design projects like this, and you know, obviously it still needs some more tweaking, but your level of engagement between the state and the TPA to come up with a design that meets the needs of the community, that's desirable for the community, that protects pedestrians and bicyclists and still moves traffic. The two road projects that I referenced on the county's plan, despite trying to do that, they're still just dropped into the county's road plan without any consideration to any of those comments. And it's basically five laning Coconut with, you know, four lanes of traffic and a suicide lane down the middle with no consideration that those two road projects are in entirely residential areas. And, you know, basically putting a throughway between, you know, somebody's home. And I just am so impressed with the thoughtfulness that has gone into this planning and the community workshops that you're going to do. And just wanted to say thank you to both Nick and your team and to Secretary O'Reilly and his team that's well represented today. I appreciate what you're trying to do.
Thank you.
A few comments and questions, but I want to just preface that, number one, I'm not and never have been a supporter of urbanization, despite now what I may say, and also want to emphasize that my comments are more generic, and I want those who are before us to understand that. It's interesting because as I was listening to everybody else speak, I think the issue was, and I think Vice Mayor Weinroth kind of framed it very well, is that, you know, we probably need to have generic conversations. So I'm taking this as an opportunity, not having really, I mean, I've been in this area, but it's been a long time. So I just wanted to frame that. But I have the question generically, what is the generic? And then I heard the use, presenter used the word of having to make compromise decisions. I'm a professional engineer. I can very well relate to compromise decisions, but then I wonder, and that's my questions is, what are the factors to consider when in design solutions? So we don't know that, right? And so that's kind of, I think if we got in those conversations, we would understand. So yes, I recognize it's extraordinary collaborations, but I sit here wondering, I bet you some of my colleagues do up here, is this factor even being considered or not? If we knew it was, I might feel better about that someone is really enabled to make a compromise decision. Some questions I had, and I'm just going to frame them. You don't necessarily have to answer now because it's generic. I want to emphasize that, but also want to frame, you know, there's consequences of using a suburban design approach. And I just want to relate to that again. And that's why I said that, you know, I'm not fond of urbanizing, but I think Indiantown Road and I-95, at least for my recollection, maybe the last suburban interchange on 995. And for years, I've reflected upon this, that there were some adverse consequences to a suburban design. What it was for years is, you come off I-95, and if you were not from that area, you know, the off-ramp was so liberally designed for a suburban area that people, if you're out of the area, you wouldn't know you're getting off, you're entering into a town. And so literally it took years, and we would always have to, you know, do speed traps and stuff to get people, when they get off the road, to slow down to 45 mile an hour. And then over the years, I finally got FDOT to put a speed limit sign on the off ramp, but then it was a ridiculous 25 mile an hour that no one pays attention to. But my only point is, you know, that let's make sure that if we're picturing this area as suburban, we don't necessarily bring something that isn't the right and safer thing to do, because even as a suburban area, it could have been an urban interchange. And in so doing, we wouldn't have the challenge we have for bikers from the farms to come into town, and because you can't cross, you know, that you can't safely make that crossing. So the fact that this one is, you know, suburban, and, you know, look at the aerials, not from being this area, you know, they're still certainly urban, and this is an area that's going to, by the time we get this thing done, there may be a lot of growth. And I really just want to make sure that was kind of taken into account. But so kind of questions I have is, I'd like to know just generically to these studies, what is the design criteria for how many traffic signal cycles any vehicle may have to wait to get to the intersection? Because I tell you that, quite frankly, you get too many inner light changes, and that drives driver behaviors to unsafety. So, you know, I made it in our comprehensive plan a valid requirement to take into account, and it's more the side streets, because FDOT probably may only be considering the main corridor. But if you have a side lane that has to sit through 3, 4, 5, I'm not exaggerating here. I sit through 3 light changes to get across Indian Town Road. At some point in time, people get frustrating. And then that's why, gee, after you've waded through and we're gonna have to wait one more to a fourth life change, people run the light, push the light. That's when accidents happen. So I'm curious if that is a design criteria that is even considered. And then U-turns, I just want to emphasize, U-turns also represent delays. So while I appreciate the compromise decision that has to be made, you know, to accommodate someone changing, it's just not an easy, you just can't say, you know, oh, just let them go to the next intersection, because it's almost funny. Another road that I normally go through, we can count on, you want to get in the second turn lane, because the first one is going to really be, it may look shorter, but there's a good percentage of people, you know, doing U-turns. So I appreciate the challenge you all have in coming up with, you know, the compromise decisions, but I want to make sure that I'm beginning to understand more the totality of what you do consider, right?
Yeah.
Because again, I submit, you cause driver frustration. And that's why I feel as an elected official responsible that if I didn't do my job to try to eliminate that with proper designs, then I'm contributing to the frustration that might have led to, you know, some unsafe, you know, situation. And then lastly, I'm conjuring up images in my mind when I hear the third turn lane, and I realize, you know, why that's needed. But the bigger, the more number of turn lanes you have, the intersection gets wider and wider. I'm also, you know, wondering about at what point in time, you know, does that come into account? Because then that delays the time for a pedestrian to get across an intersection, right? So I'm not suggesting you need a third lane, you do it. But then that needs to be factored into the design, right? I mean, six lane road is one thing, but a six lane load blown out to be, you know, 8, you know, 10 and 12 lanes because of, you know, turn lanes. And I'm not suggesting we have that here, but so I'm just maybe a sidebar with FDOT, but I'm interested in really truly understanding the factors that they're considering in making because I perceive that they're not considering something that's outside of what they think is their jurisdiction. So they may not be considering the wait time on those wanting to cross the road, you know, because it's not a state road, but any event.
I want to get us moved on. One more comment from.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really enjoyed the comment by Commissioner McKinley, and to the Vice Mayor's point, there's a pop group that had a song back in the fast lane. And I understand the compromise here. I mean, cycling in the glades is not an issue, but we know at some point it is a concern. That's why you have fast lane with cars. There are people who seem to want to be at high speed. We can kick this can down the road, but in the years to come, we're going to be back at this table talking about it. But I understand the concern. Going back to your point, Vice Mayor, maybe last year, this zero vision, it's really just a concept. It's clearly not possible. We can drive to get there, but it's not possible. I watch people as they ride these bikes, and there are some aggressive individuals. And we got to start thinking outside the box how we address those aggressive individuals, because only imagine if I'm going slow and then you have the ones behind, it's going to create more problems if we don't start thinking outside the box, come up with some ideas and solutions. Again, you can kick it down the road, but it's going to keep coming back up. Thank you.
Okay. Johnny, go ahead.
Sorry, this will be a really quick question. It's actually for FDOT. Based on the statement that was made earlier, will FDOT be taking a position that there is no consideration of going below 7 feet for a bike lane, or is that still an item that could be discussed? Because it sounded like the statement was they were very concerned going below 7 feet due to liability issues.
As an FDOT on any project, we always work with our partners and we'll continue to work with TPA. The request that has been made, we will have to further look at, and you know, we'll get back with the TPA once the discussion, conversations, cost implications, safety evaluation happens. Okay. And we'll come back with that then.
Thank you.
Okay. We kind of deviated a little bit in the conversation, but a lot of good input, and clearly there's a concern here. I like to put something on the table for the board right now. First of all, I think over the last year, 7 or 8 months, I think this board has really moved in this sentiment about doing something about unsafe conditions for bicyclists. And I think this is a juncture point where we can say, you know what, we're going to put a stake in the ground here to demonstrate our strong commitment to changing what we've been doing all along. We can't continue to build these bike paths the way they're being built and expect the safety quotient to move in the right direction. I just want to comment on this 10% comment about the 10% aggressive riders. We don't plan the highways just to address the aggressive drivers, do we? We plan the highways for the preponderance of drivers that are going to be driving out there, regular people trying to follow the rules to get from point A to point B. We need to adopt a similar mentality when we're looking at these bicycle lanes. We should not be designing bicycle lanes for the top 10% speeders or whoever, you know, want to be aggressive. We should design it for the 90% of the public who wants to use that and do it in a safe way. Now, safety. To me, it's illogical to have a highway or a road where people are traveling 50 miles an hour, and right next to them, you got this lane with people on bicycles. This just seems like we're inviting an opportunity for something bad to happen. My question is, why aren't we looking at putting in some kind of buffer, physical buffer? I don't know if they're metal poles. I don't know what the answer is, but that's what we should be considering. Instead of an empty 2-foot buffer, let's put something in between the bicyclists and the cars. All right, I'd like to see the engineers and staff do some brain work around that and come back with options in that vein. To that extent, though, I want to see by a show of hands, are we this committed as a board to changing the direction we're going in with bicycle safety? If you are, raise your hand. I want to see a consensus. I mean, I'm talking about us doing something, not just talking about it and asking DOT to look at something, all right? Now, with that said, I see, let the record show we have a consensus of hands raised saying that we actually want to begin doing something to change this trajectory about safety for bicyclists. And for this project, I'm going to recommend today that we table this project. I want the staff of both DOT and TPA to come back with options that really will address putting some separation in between the cars and the bicycles. Can I get a go ahead.
Motion to table to allow staff to work with FDOT to allow for protected bike lanes as second. Part of the resolution.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Do we have to take a roll call on that, Margie or Paul?
I'm sorry, for my clarification, I was writing. I have Mayor Grant as a motion maker, and who is? Thank you, Vice Mayor.
So, can I do? Do we need a roll call?
No, you do not, and it's non-debatable.
Okay, all in favor?
Good.
Aye. Any opposed?
Commissioner Sachs, yes.
Okay, we hear you, Commissioner. All opposed? We have no opposed, so the motion carries as presented. I just want to say to DOT and to the TPA staff, we appreciate the efforts that you've been putting forth, but I think the message we're giving you today is it's a different day, and it is a different priority, and we don't want to continue to talk about this. We want to hear about, oh, we looked at it, and we worked with the staff, and we came up with the, we want a different approach that's really going to protect our bicyclists. So with all due respect, that's where we are right now. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Moving right along.
Mr. Chairman, on behalf of all MAFLs, we thank all of you mammals for being the bad drivers. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I think that completes item two. We're going to item 3A, which is an information items. We're going to ask our member, Council Member Thompson. He's going to give us an update, I think, on Smart Growth America Championship Institute.
So let me start by saying I've had over the last 8 months or so the benefit of being part of what was, I think, the inaugural Active People Healthy Nation Champions Institute, which was a group of individuals that came together across the country, local government, to become really champions for the issue we were just discussing. That is more complete streets, changing the perspective to make sure that we are building roads that are safe for everybody and not just the most efficient means of travel for cars. And it was a combination of the intersection of two important things, which are health policy and transportation policy. And all of us here are transportation policy makers, I suppose. But the CDC about a year ago put together a program where they have an effort to increase activity on our roads. They have an effort to put, I think the number was 27 million more the effort was to have 27 million more people who are active in their daily commute and around their neighborhoods and around their streets by the year 2027. So they came together with Smart Growth America to put together a program to create champions who can help accomplish that. And where does that happen? It happens at the local level. It happens with us. So they put together this Champions Institute, and I was blessed to be chosen to be one of these champions. And the groups, as you'll see here, it's all over the country, probably less urban areas. The most urban was Houston, but after that, it was probably maybe Louisville. But then after that, it was like South Florida. It was Boca. So we had the benefit of getting, over the course of 6 months, every month there was a training seminar held on one afternoon. So it's not a heavy lift. But we would get instruction from transportation planners, urban planners, health policy makers on how best to accomplish what can be a heavy lift when it comes to finally implementing things like complete streets, because it goes against the unfortunate wave of time and some of how, you know, roadways and our transportation network was designed. And the difficult policy decisions that come from that at the local level when it comes to, for example, reducing lane capacity. And so we had, over the course of that 6 months, like I said, a series of seminars where we learned the following. You know, for us as transportation policymakers, it is actually very helpful to know the kind of it. Bob, I should have said that I was waiting for you to make a motion to adopt on my presentation before I started. But we had the benefit of learning the basics of complete streets, how to put together a policy if your community doesn't have one. We here at Palm Beach County do, because the TPA has put together guidelines for things like complete streets. But then it gets into the nuts and bolts of how do you actually implement it? How do you design it in a way where you can get consensus? Where is the funding going to come from? Not every community has the benefit that we have here in Palm Beach County, where we have local funding source like the TPA that can help add to and subsidize the cost of these important improvements. Some of these other communities don't have that. We talked about what the return on investment looks like. And we talked about being able to communicate this in a way that is compelling to our constituents, because we're going to get pushback at some point from some group about What do you mean you want to take away lanes of traffic on Federal Highway? What do you mean you want to cut down Palmetto Park Road to one lane each way? And those are just two active discussions that we're having at the city of Boca Raton now. And so for me, at least, the training that we got in this could not have come at a better time, because it was topical, timely, and is going to help us have these discussions going forward. We also went through a few case studies, successful places where these kinds of changes were made. Greenville, South Carolina was one. Irwin, Tennessee was one. And then one which I think you all are familiar with, at least some of those in West Palm Beach, because Clematis Street right here, one street over, was a success story for this. And it wasn't without its challenges. Mayor Keith James came and explained to us the kinds of difficulty he was having. Because remember, the businesses were closed, or the road was closed. And thus the businesses had impacts for how long? It was a while. But it all came out better at the end. And that's what local policymaking is. It's looking for doing the best we can, despite short-term challenges, to make sure that we come out with a long-term solution that is better for everybody. And that's what that was. And then the last part, and the one that was most significant, I think, for me, was the capstone. This isn't just talking about it like our chairman says. We're not just here to talk about these issues. We're here to make it happen, actually make decisions to actually improve things. And so the last segment of our Champions Institute was figure out a way, whether it's coming up with a policy that your community can implement, or building a campaign to raise awareness, or coming up with an actual active activity that you're going to do to use your training. And in my case, that all culminated in, let me just take a step back. So it was December of last year. We were going through a training on what it looks like. What do roads look like from non-drivers? And I remember seeing this slide, which was put on by one of the trainers at Smart Growth America. And it made me wonder, especially the one on the right. You see the one on the right there? It's a sidewalk with poles right in the middle of it. And what they were trying to stress to all of us was how to change your perspective. Because all of us as local decision makers, our greatest relationship to our transportation network, our most common way of how we know what this looks like, is because we drive it. We drive our city, we drive our community, we drive our district. We know what it looks like, we think. We have a sense of what it really is like. But as we know, roads are not just for drivers. And I was guilty, I thought, of knowing my city, but knowing in a way that was kind of driving, specific. And so I wondered what these things would look like from the ground view, from the street level perspective. And that's what gave me the idea to actually go out and see what my city looked like from the street level. How was I going to do that? I wasn't going to walk it because it would take me forever. But over the years, I had been doing this thing where I was running around and picking up trash. And I finally figured it out. I was like, I need to figure out how many miles of roads there are in the city and how I can accomplish this, because I want to actually see what my city looks like from the ground level. And that's what gave rise to this Run the City initiative of mine, where I am actually running every mile of every street in the entire city, cleaning up trash, true, but also doing this, seeing what it looks like from somebody who's pushing a stroller or in a wheelchair or a bicyclist, including the mammals. And it came to be an incredible and important, I think, change in perspective, because it allowed me to get a better understanding of what my city really is like. And there are so many users of our roadway that don't have the benefit of a car. When I was a kid, I didn't have a car until I was 21, 22, something like that. So I did a lot of walking when I was going to school, or when I was going to my job, or I was home for the summer from college. I walked. And you get a car for about 10 or 15 years, you kind of forget about that. You forget about what that perspective is. And you forget about how different the life is when you're somebody walking or having to bike to work than it is when you're driving. And I was thankful that I had kind of a chance to see what that was like again. And so my capstone project, such as it is this Run the City initiative. And it is all a product of the Champions Institute, because it made me change my perspective on what our roadway systems are for and who they're for. And so now what I'm doing is documenting the kinds of safety improvements. I hope this works. Documenting the kinds of safety improvements that we can see on our roadway. So I just mentioned before the idea of Palmetto Park Road. I ran this in early January and documented using the software the good things too, right? The good views, the good things that the city has done in our downtown, but also a couple of things that we could improve upon, not just the trash. But this side of Palmetto Park Road had a couple of issues just like the one that I saw during my training. That was a pole in the middle of a sidewalk that pushes people like me pushing a stroller into the road. And this is at one of the most pedestrian, or should be one of the most pedestrian friendly parts of our city. It's right next to the beach. So now we are taking the steps to help address some of those safety issues, be they narrow sidewalks or lack of crosswalks at some places here, mid-block crosswalks. And so, like I was saying, this is a beach community. You can't even cross the road unless you're walking all the way down to A1A, which is just not practical. So in the course of this initiative, I've been documenting these issues and sending them on to the appropriate government agencies. Sometimes it's the city, other times it's the county, other times it's FDOT and their folks left. And so I wanted to make sure that they know that when they come into the meetings, it's not always stones that are being thrown at them. We have very robust discussion with them about safety improvements the way it should be. But they did a very good job on Glades Road. I had identified some issues. And I think this is just an example of government working faster than it normally does. They've already fixed a huge stretch of sidewalk on Glades Road, which is a state road. County's done the same thing. Some of these sidewalk improvements that I had identified, thanks to our county partners, those issues have already been addressed. And so I'll stress one last time that this institute, the Champions Institute, was incredibly helpful to me as a local transportation policymaker because it helped change my perspective in a very, very active way. They are now accepting applications for the next round. They're accepting applications for the next year's training. Again, 6 months, one training seminar each month, not a heavy lift. But the impact is, at least in my case, has been enormous. So those applications, I think, are being accepted now by the Champions Institute and Smart Growth America. So I'd urge everybody, if you're interested in that, to apply because it made a lasting impact on me. And I'm here to answer any questions if you have.
Commissioner. Yeah, thank you. Councilman, you know, you do. Just by putting up the list of your cohorts on that team that you served with over the course of the training sessions, you know, I note that Mayor Steve Williams from Huntington, Virginia, or West Virginia, was on there. So immediately seeing his name gives me a different perspective. You talk about trying to make it more pedestrian friendly, more bicyclist friendly, picking up trash, beautifying the community. For those of you that don't know, Huntington, West Virginia was the city most impacted by the opioid epidemic. They have lost a significant amount of young people in that community. And so I think another part of this initiative, and I'm so happy that you brought this up today, you have the opportunity to heal communities as well by providing physical fitness opportunities that contribute to a healthier mental health. And those that are probably in that community in active recovery, having a safe outlet to walk, to get fresh air, to ride the bike. So not only in our community, we take a lot of those resources for granted, but in his community, he's trying to help his community heal. And so thank you. It's been a hell of a year for local elected officials. You've had a lot on your plate and a lot of little ones in your home as well that you've been trying to balance, and taking the initiatives that you're doing to run your city. I'll come walk with you. I'm not quite up to running. Kelly can run. But on top of everything that you've had to do the last year to be able to make this commitment to this institute, just thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Let me say one other thing. Part of the implementation training that we had was a discussion regarding placemaking, bringing communities together, not just because the sidewalks are wider or because there's, you know, separated protected bike lanes, but the idea of implementing things like public art to create an attractive venue for people to come together and enjoy their neighbors. Remember, we were doing this in the middle of a pandemic. So, you know, all of that was kind of in the background, but even in January, when we had that discussion, you could sense that there was a demand, a huge demand, and not just in Huntington, but all over, for people to be able to come together in that way again. In cities, we can provide a venue for that if we do it right, if we do it right. And you mentioned the young ones that I have. I have five now. And typically when I go out there, at least two go with me. And I can say that my son, who's five, I told him about the sidewalk improvements that were already made on Glades Road and on Palmetto Park Road. He says, "Dad, you got to make sure you give props to the county about that." I said, "Mad props?" And he's like, "Yeah, mad props." So I wanted to make sure I told my county partners, thank you for making that happen on Palmetto Park Road. But let me say this other thing too, is that my son, the same child, whenever we're walking, whenever we're running, whatever we're doing, his eyes are now trained on sidewalk improvements. He says, "Dad, sidewalk improvement." If he sees a broken sidewalk, that's what he does. And I think that's important because that's what we want our residents to be doing, all of them, not just my kids, but all of them need to know that we are on top of these things because we want our routes to be safe. We want them to promote activity on them. And I got that benefit by getting the chance to do this training.
You better be careful. He's going to run against you.
Any other questions, comments?
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Mayor, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say thanks and kudos to my colleague. Mr. Thompson is also, he mentioned the efforts over the last years to pick up trash as he ran. But what he's done in the last few weeks has been more transformative. He's been going to different neighborhoods, getting people to come together, as he said, as a kind of post-pandemic placemaking. And I think last week picked up 100 pounds of trash, which is a staggering amount. Just in their neighborhood. For the record, our city staff is excellent. Our sanitation staff is excellent. Our roads, our municipal services are all excellent, but the extra set of eyes is helping, and it's helping get our community more involved. And I'm very glad you're doing it because I hate to run as well. So thank you for your efforts.
Thank you.
One of the best byproducts too has been over the course of time, as restrictions have loosened, as people have become more and more comfortable going out and coming into groups again, we've had just in the last month, almost, I think it was 170 volunteers have come out to come help clean their neighborhood, clean near where their office is located. And I expect that to continue. So up until now, up through today, almost 6 months, we picked up 600 pounds of trash. And the mayor is right. Like, our sanitation folks are the best in the business, but that doesn't incorporate random pieces of litter on the street, which even in a clean and beautiful place like Boca, it just happens. It just does. So that's why we're happy to help.
Thank you, sir, for that very inspiring update. Appreciate it. And the invitation is open for anyone who's interested in joining that institute for the next cycle. So we'll look at that. Okay, moving right along. We're going to get an update now from Nick on our draft mobility vision map. I'm sorry. I thought you were going to do it. Andrew is going to do it for us. Sorry.
Great. No problem. Okay. Good morning, everyone. Andrew Euler, Deputy Director of Program Development here at CPA. I know we're running late a little bit, so I want to give you a brief presentation here. And really, this is a high-level presentation. This is a discussion that's been evolving over the past few years and will continue to evolve the next few months in the next few years. So you'll be seeing frequent updates from us and our staff coming up in the next year. Our mission to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund the transportation system. I wanted to focus our attention here on collaborate. So, in this draft mobility vision and what we're moving forward, it's really going to take a lot of collaboration. It's not just our facility owners with the county, FDOT, and our local roadway owners. It's also our transit agencies, right? It's the decisions you all have to make with your local elected officials on land use decisions, which can be difficult. And it also includes our local communities and private investment in businesses along those areas. So why develop a mobility vision? So it's to achieve the TPA objective. So we have this objective to provide more mobility options in our future, to provide more car optional future. We have a ambitious target of a walk, bike, mode split of 30% by 2045.
and then also to implement desires plan elements of our long range transportation plan. So that was a vision exercise that had a list of desired improvements where we want to go into 2045. And that was adopted in December of 2019 by you all. It's to accommodate growth and economic development. So focus development in areas with existing infrastructure so we can provide more efficient services. It's to invest in mobility options to promote safety and efficiency. And it also provides predictability to entice private investments so that land use and transportation connection. So how would this mobility vision be funded? Well, the TPA and the region has continued to pursue federal and state flexibility in our funding sources to ensure that we can use that to the best of our ability and be effective in those federal and state funding sources coming to our area. But it's also going to take a local dedicated funding source. And a lot of that discussion has been moving more towards a local transportation surtax that would be a transition from our current infrastructure surtax. What this would allow us to do is to build products that are not affordable right now with existing revenues. And this also allows us to attract federal and state discretionary grants. A lot of those discretionary grants are large sums of money that we can bring to our area, but it does require a local dedicated funding source to provide as a match. And lastly, what a local transportation surtax could do is provides a local dedicated funding source for not only construction, but to also operate and maintain those mobility services once they're built. So the framework of how we're showing this mobility vision includes three main components. It's the 561 transit plan and connected corridors and the connecting state roadways as well. And so these are ones originated out of the long range transportation plan. And this is to implement selected transit investments along each corridor after we do those multimodal corridor studies. It's to rebuild state roadways with pedestrian and bicycle facilities to improve safety and efficiency. Next is the county transportation investments. So rebuilding the county roadways with pedestrian and bicycle facilities to improve safety. And it's to enhance traffic signal technology and efficiency of our traffic signals. And then also to widen roadways where still needed in car-centric areas. And the next portion is the city transportation investments. So again, rebuilding those city streets with pedestrian, bicycle, and other safety features. And then also investing in mobility services selected by the city. So providing some more circulating services within your local communities, and then how those would also interact with the greater 561 corridors and the other corridors throughout the county and region. And I'm gonna give you a highlight of the map that was provided in your packet. And it starts again with that 561 transit plan and state roadways. So these are the ones that originated from the long range transportation plan and that we're currently studying. You'll get an update on the Okeechobee Boulevard one here next. And those are in blue on the map. It also includes the tier one pedestrian bicycle facilities that we identified in the long range transportation plan and for needed investment. That's 117 miles of state owned roadways in the green. It includes the county facilities. So those county roadway widenings that were vetted through our long range transportation plan process and adopted by you all to include into that plan. From the LRTP. It also includes traffic signal investments, which we don't have shown on the map, but that includes over 1,000 Palm Beach County traffic signals that they maintain and also includes Boca Raton traffic signals. And it's those tier one pedestrian bicycle facilities where there's still gaps and priorities along county roadways, 189 miles. And lastly, the municipal facilities and services. Again, that tier one network of 68 miles of pedestrian bicycle facilities, the Boca Raton traffic signals investments, and then municipal mobility services. So those last mile connections, first and last mile connections to the main areas in the corridor, the 561 plan, and then also local services within your community. And this is my last slide for y'all. The implementation timeline for this. So again, this is an evolving discussion, really refining mobility vision elements over the next few years, getting more feedback from stakeholders in the community, especially when it comes to doing those multimodal corridor studies, creating those cost estimates for projects and services, and then how are we gonna fund those products and services? So what's gonna be the split of federal and state funding that we can get into our county, and then what is the local dedicated matches for those and how we're going to operate it moving forward. And then once that's all determined, really ramping up the educational campaign to everyone in early 2024 with the explanation of the vision content that originated in the past 2 years. And then potentially a ballot initiative by November 2024. So this would become effective once the sunset of the current infrastructure surtax. And that's all I have for you. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
My quick question is traffic signal prioritization as part of this mobility plan?
It's a good question. Yes, we received from the county engineering staff and Boca Raton their needs going into the future, and that is included as
that's okay. One of those. Yeah, my big thing is along with that last mile is to have PalmTran included with that traffic signal prioritization so that we can give the buses that priority that they need, because if we want to increase ridership, we have to have that incentive, which I feel is very valuable. We saw the Palm Beach Post article regarding commuter rail. However, we can't just have all the cars come to the commuter rail and park there in our downtowns to go to other downtowns. We want to have that hub and spoke model that people can go from around the county to the East Corridor, whether it's the CSX line or the FEC line, to better utilize our roads and transportation. Thank you.
Just quickly, thank you. This is great. Good starting launch point. We somewhat touched on this earlier today quite a bit about, you know, bicycles. And, you know, I personally, as an engineer, always thought it's crazy that FDOT's putting bike lanes on a 45-mile-an-hour road. So really, if we think about that, you know, county roadways provide the best opportunity to provide, because they're generally lower speeds, provide a safer environment for bikers. And just as a point of example, I heard, you know, a few meetings ago, might have been last one, that the county had just approved Prosperity Farms Road being done. And so as a, you know, as someone who lives in that area, although outside of my jurisdiction, it isn't on the map, and yet, and I'm not finding fault, but it's that kind of roadway that is a much better, true mobility vision, because I can see it being used safely. So I know we started with the FDOT roadways because they've been investing in this, but I really would want, if we're going to be selling this to the public and really achieving our vision, that Prosperity Farms Road and perhaps a lot of, you know, others that haven't been targeted yet should be put on this map, you know, because otherwise, you know, you look at this and, okay, if you live in this one area over here where there's a lot of options, you feel like there's something for you. But if you look in other areas, you don't get that feeling. And I'm just pointing out Prosperity Farms Road should be on there for that reason, and then maybe others. So this is a great starting point. It's not a criticism, but let's open our minds up with the county roads as being perhaps better options, you know, for safer bicycling, because generally they're lower speeds.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Obviously, we're going to hear a lot more about this concept, and as we move forward and we get more specific information that we want to present to this board move. And we have you saw the high level timeline that we're looking at. We'll be refining that timeline as we move further to get to the goals we're trying to achieve. So thank you, Andrew. To that extent, now we're going to hear an update from James Reinhart. He's going to talk about the initiation of the Okeechobee Boulevard and State Road 7 study kickoff. You're on, sir.
Great, thank you. Good morning, everybody. I promise I will be quick and efficient, just like we hope for our enhanced transit in the future. So again, my name is James Reinhart. I'm the lead transit coordinator for the Palm Beach TPA. I'm going to be providing a quick update on the Okeechobee Boulevard and State Road 7 multimodal corridor study. So quickly, I'm going to be touching on the study purpose and limits, as well as the study components, and then wrapping up with the public engagement and stakeholder engagement efforts, as well as the timeline for this study. So as a quick refresher, going off of what Andrew just presented, this corridor was identified in the TPA's 561 plan as one of the key east-west corridors that we've identified for to evaluate multimodal alternatives for not just enhanced transit and also the support of land uses, but also for commercial and personal vehicle transportation, as well as pedestrian and bicycle transportation. And to zoom in a little bit closer on that corridor, starting on the south side, the limits would be from the mall at Wellington Green at State Road 7, and then move north along State Road 7 to Okeechobee Boulevard in Royal Palm Beach, and then go east along Okeechobee and terminate at Rosemary Avenue, right by Restoration Hardware in downtown West Palm Beach. And a big portion of why we selected this corridor, it is a high ridership corridor for PalmTran at this time, but also within a half mile of the corridor, we identified 42,000 residents and 46,000 jobs along this corridor, which makes this one a key point to create that safe and efficient and connected multimodal transportation service for the county. So the components of this study that we're going to be working on, we're going to be doing multiple transit alternative analyses as well as roadway alternative analyses. And then in adjacent to the actual roadway itself and the transportation along the road, we're also going to be looking at health impact assessment and how the quality of life of the people that live and work along this corridor would be impacted by the alternatives that we're studying throughout this study timeline. And then also the land use and the economic development opportunities that can happen from investing in transit alternative as well as roadway alternatives. And then we're going to be doing a series of public and stakeholder engagement events. We have a study advisory working group that's helping guide us through this process. We're going to be meeting four times throughout the time the study, and as well as a health impact assessment working group. Study advisory is primarily more of a technical team on the roadway and transit components, and then the health impact is professionals in the that represent the communities as well as the health industry along the corridor. We're also going to be doing land use and economic development interviews and a workshop with key people along the corridor. We have a series of public workshops throughout this timeline. And then also we'll be doing about 32 or up to 32 key stakeholder interviews with representatives along that corridor as well. And we have started that process. We are about nearing halfway through it. We're going to be reaching out again to set up more meetings through for this project. And then finally, we have on this slide on the right hand side, we have a screenshot of our Okeechobee Boulevard and State Road 7 project website. That's going to be the landing page to learn more about public engagement events, as well as updates about the documents that have been created throughout this study. And the timeline for this study is we kicked it off in the spring, and then between April and June, we will be having our first round of working group meetings and then doing stakeholder interviews and also doing a Stories of the Corridor, which is myself and part of our project team will be riding the bus service and meeting people along the corridor and interviewing them and learning about their experiences of riding transit and accessing the transportation services on Okeechobee and State Road 7. And then in July and September, we will finish stakeholder interviews, but then also do our second round of working group meetings and our first public outreach event. And so that we can do our third round of meetings and second public outreach in the fall and early winter, so that we can provide an update to all of you in December. And then, so in January through March, we'll do our final round of working group meetings and public outreach events so that we can get to narrow down to a locally preferred alternative to share with all of you in March of 2022. And so the ways that all of you can get involved is first visit our project website at palmbeachtpa.org/Okie and participate in public workshops or encourage your communities to participate in the workshops and promote the participation. If you have more information or want more information, you can contact me. But then also one factor I wanted to show, and as Robin pulls it up on our project website, we have a interactive comment map that if you're on the homepage and you select the comment map button, it'll bring you down to the bottom. Then you can select on this project map and it will take you to our comment map page where you can go in, zoom into the corridor and drop pins on the map and provide feedback about the transportation needs of the communities along that corridor. You can also click on other people that have already drafted comments and then like them or add additional feedback based on what they have said. So I'd encourage all of you to take some time and navigate around. It's a pretty fun tool to use. And I hope you'll be able to help us as we go through these public outreach events. And that's all I have for this update.
I do have one question. Your workshop initiatives, do you think you're going to be doing that in a virtual model or, you know, people actually being in a model?
We initially planned for them to be virtual, but as restrictions are lifting, we are revising our scope with our project team to make them more in person and a more engaging process okay. that way.
Any questions? Go ahead.
Thank you. Just a brief comment. Thank you very much for working on this study. And I'm sure you're connected with the various departments of the city of West Palm Beach, but anything that we can do as elected officials, et cetera, to get your message out there, get you more feedback to the study, certainly very supportive. Thanks for taking this on.
Great. Thank you.
No further questions? Thank you. Okay. Now that brings us to item D, which is partner agency updates. Do we have any partner agencies who wish to provide update information for us today? Seeing none, we'll move on then. And that takes us to the last item is item four, which is administrative items. They're just here for your reference point. The important information I want to convey is our next meeting will be July 15th. And if there are no questions, thank you all. For being here and thank you for your participation and input. We stand adjourned. So you think